I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Actual people, this is exciting. A live version of the format. Hope everyone's good. I feel like we should do the like normal intro voices.
Okay.
I feel like I should go like, hello. Someone told me I sound like a middle-aged mum doing that, which is just, that's who I am. I have to embrace that, yeah. Really.
But anyway, if anyone is here who has never listened to our podcast before, my name's Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And together we do the Seriously podcast, where we take pop culture seriously. It's that simple.
Basically. I feel like everyone here has probably heard it, otherwise you're kind of mad for buying a ticket to this thing. That it's just like, a complete mystery to you. But yeah, every week we do two kind of topical culture reviews, pop culture reviews, and one like not so topical recommend. And it's always great fun, and we've been doing it for quite a while.
Yeah, we've 2 years and 110 episodes.
110?
It's a lot.
What's that in podcast years?
I feel quite old.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, we take stuff seriously. That's really what we're all about. A good illustration of that is the very first episode we ever did. We read Grey by E.L. James.
Yeah, the like 50 Shades of Grey spin-off from Christian Grey's perspective, which was very weird. I actually only read half of it. It's a lie to say that I read the whole thing. But I did try really hard and read half of it and try to take it very seriously.
We watched a documentary about Amy Winehouse and we listened to a lot of One Direction. So that gives you a sense of the kinds of things we're willing to take seriously and apply a proper critical lens to things that maybe don't always necessarily get that treatment, deservedly or undeservedly so.
Yeah, and it's been great fun. And then we've done lots of specials. So we've done specials on like Harry Potter, Love Actually, Friends, loads of things. And then last week we did like an Ask Us Anything special where people emailed in with questions. And one question we really liked from our friend Laura, who's been on the show and has done the show, and I'm sure she's here somewhere. She asked us to talk about problematic, your fave is problematic culture. And we did a little on that, didn't we?
Yeah, and we got a really interesting response to it. So we decided off the back of that, that this would be a good topic to give greater treatment and also a good one to do in front of an audience where you guys can contribute, tell us things, tell us who your problematic faves are, that kind of thing. So stand by for a very serious dissection of your problematic faves.
Yeah, we thought we'd like maybe think a little bit less about your faves problematic culture and a bit more about your actual problematic faves themselves. Who are they? What do they want? How can they be stopped, etc. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We should probably start by actually talking about what a problematic fave is. Does anyone not know what a problematic fave is? Everyone seems pretty confident. So I feel like a problematic fave is a celebrity that you really love or like that society loves in some way. I feel like celebrity implies celebrated, etc.
A celebrity artist, a maker, a film director, an actor, a musician. Those are the normal category, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, politicians creep into it sometimes as well, I think.
Do you think so? Ed Miliband?
Ed Miliband.
Is he a problematic fave?
I think he's just a fave at this point, isn't he?
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton often appears on lists and this kind of stuff.
I couldn't even begin to go into Hillary Clinton territory today.
Yeah, that's not why we're here.
Let's not do
other podcasts are available if that's what you want.
Yeah,
no.
Good ones. Not us.
We're here for the filmmakers, the artists, the musicians, the authors? Do we have an author? I can't remember.
We have some authors.
We have some authors, yeah.
I think the thing is that the problematic element is like they've either got a belief or they do something or they make something that is offensive in some way or that people might find offensive.
Yeah, and it often comes from people who, up until that point, you've associated with generally progressive beliefs, or they've shown a strong interest in social justice, or they've generally had a career up to that point that you've approved of in some way, and then they do something or something happens that makes you reanalyze their whole career up to that point.
That's when the knife really
hits and you go, actually, maybe I've been wrong this whole time to hold you in any kind of esteem.
Yeah, and I think we now have way more than ever before, obviously, because internet. And so you get a much like broader sense of the people behind celebrities.
And also once any kind of controversy kicks off, a celebrity no longer can hide behind their publicist and just wait for it all to go away. They have direct access to their fan base via Twitter or Instagram or their own website, and they are able to make it all a lot worse.
Totally.
There's also just something in the way that people talk about with politics, how, you know, the demand for 24-hour news just means politicians just have to say stuff all the time. That's true of potential faves as well, right? That the demand for them to produce content is that much greater.
Yeah, and the burden on them to be woke.
Yeah, that's true.
We do take this seriously, as with everything. I think it can be really, really sad when someone you really, really like really disappoints you. I don't know if anyone's had that experience here where you've had like an artist or someone that you've absolutely loved and then they like say something and you're like, ugh, that really hurts me and just makes me feel weird because, you know, I really idolised you in some way. So we were going to talk a little bit about the first time that happened to us because it was so sad and it stuck with us, didn't it? Do you have one that you want to lead with, Caroline?
Yeah, okay. And there are several embarrassing elements packed into this. I trust you all not to judge me. But as in my early teens, probably 12, 13, 14, I was obsessed with a series of science fiction fantasy books by the author David Eddings. I don't know if anyone here has ever read them. They're called The Belgariad or something equally nerdy like that.
Anyone? No.
Just me. They had a big fan base in America. And, you know, in the 90s, I'd say David Eddings had a profile getting towards that like George R. R. Martin has. He had that kind of status, and he, you know, I used to see pictures and stuff of him doing massive signings, and he was a big deal, and it was his name on all the books. He did 10 books, series finished, and then possibly out of devotion to his fans, possibly to try and milk a bit more money out of a franchise, he did a few of those kind of companion volumes that you often get with sort of world building type franchises. And suddenly, it wasn't just his name. It didn't just say David Eddings. It said David and Lee Eddings. I was like, who is this other person? And then you read the introduction to one of the volumes, and he explains that Lee is his wife, who he fulsomely praises in this introduction for her role in bringing the series into being and how she's always been so instrumental and he couldn't have done it without her, and that's why he's now belatedly recognising her in these lesser volumes that far fewer people would read with a co-author credit. And that was the first time I thought, oh, this guy, not so much.
Yeah, I love the idea of like tiny, how old were you?
Probably about 13.
Yeah, like preteen Caroline having the realisation that like women's uncredited labour is a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad.
But yeah, especially because in this introduction, he made it very clear that her contribution had been major and had continued throughout the series.
More than just like, thank you for supporting our family.
Yeah, and it wasn't like
looking
that.
After the children
it
while
wasn't
I write these novels.
Like booking much. It was like, yeah, she co-created this with me, but I'm only now allowing her to have her name on the front of the book.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had like so many problematic faves as a teenager that I actually just don't think I was really aware of how problematic. Like, I loved the Rolling Stones. Mick Jagger was my idol. I look back and I'm like, skeezy, not great. But like me at the time would have just been like, no, that's not. He's never done anything wrong. What are you talking about? I like wouldn't have been able to deal with it. So my first realizations of like people being problematic was like when I got to uni, I think. And I studied English, and I was like reading about writers that I really liked. And I remember reading in some sort of weird dusty book about Gladstone and Tennyson, the poet, having an argument at a dinner table where Tennyson was just coming out like with full-on like racist slurs constantly, and Gladstone was trying to like beat him back a bit and be like, no, we have to like talk about like other races as though they're human, that's an important thing, and Tennyson would just be like, no, and use loads of slurs. So I was a bit like, oh, Tennyson, I thought you were like a nice poet who wrote about how sad it is when people die, but apparently you're like awful. And then I also had the same thing with Virginia Woolf, because I love Virginia Woolf, or I really loved her books at the time, and I read one of her diary entries. I'm sure some people might have come across this. I think it was like January 1915 or something, and she goes on a walk and she walks past all these like mentally disabled people, and she's like, oh, I saw this long line of imbeciles, which I think is a quite a common word at that time, but whatever. And then she says, I wish that they were all killed, they should all be killed. And I took it to my tutor at the time and was like, whoa, this seems like, this is just like Nazi shit. And my tutor at the time was like, mm-hmm. And I was like, so what do we do with this? She was a great tutor. Her name's Hermione Lee. Some of you might have read some of her books. She was really, really great. And I was like, Hermione, like, tell me how to feel about this, please. Like, what do I do? Can I still enjoy Mrs. Dalloway, knowing that she felt like this about people who were differently mentally ill to the way she was? And she was like, I don't know, babe, like, good luck with that. This is what we're all trying to deal with all the time. And I was like, oh, God, so you're not going to, like, give me an answer to this? And she was like, I actually can't. You have to decide for yourself. And that was when the world of the problematic fave opened before me, mm-hmm. a terrible and confusing cavern that it is. So some pretty dark first experiences there with the problematic fave.
Yeah, so having shared our early stories, we thought we might talk about a few current topical problematic faves, and if you have any that you would like to discuss, shout them out at this point.
Yeah, also, we forgot to say at the beginning, we love like group chats on Seriously, as I'm sure listeners will know. So if at any point you want to join in, please just raise your hand, and we can't see you that well because the lights, but we'll try our best. But first, we've got a mystical bag of problematic faves for some theatre.
We're all about the
theatre, live event.
Yeah.
Caroline, do you want to pick out a problematic fave from my problematic bag?
Okay.
Just one.
Okay.
Who have you got?
Ariana Grande.
Oh, she's like such a gentle one to start us off yeah. with, isn't she? She hasn't done anything too terrible. Does everyone know why Ariana Grande is supposedly problematic? No, this is one of my favourite ones ever. Ariana Grande in 2015, she licked a donut from a donut shop that without buying the donut, and after she licked the donut she said, I hate America. And then she also said some like probably quite genuinely problematic things about how America's like just full of obese people and that we shouldn't, you know, that it's disgusting, I think was her word, disgusting. So Ariana Grande, donut licker, not donut buyer, unpatriotic and potentially fatphobic. What do we make of this?
Well, the internet response at the time was amazing, especially viewing it from sort of across the Atlantic.
Totally.
Not least because the idea of a celebrity going into a shop, licking a donut and then leaving is just inherently comic.
Also that it was like, it's the most American baked good, isn't it? It's not like she licked a croissant and was like, I hate America. She would have had to have said, I hate France. Like, it was really good.
It was really good. But then also the sort of patriotism dimension to it just caused certain quarters of American internet to catch fire in a way that was quite funny, because yeah, the idea that somehow she'd harmed a national symbol was
yeah.
very amusing.
If she'd like licked a British treat and said, I hate Britain, everyone in Britain would, and she was a British pop star, everyone over here would have been like, us too, babe, it's shit, isn't it, always rains. But in America they're obviously very like, no, we love America. So I think among certain right-wing circles, and right-wing circles already, I think, have this very weird relationship with Disney stars, don't they? Where they, like, love to, like, put former Disney child stars on yeah. a pedestal and then, like, love to tear them down too. So she was really caught up in all that, basically. I think that there was some good criticism of, like, oh, weird, like, you know, like, child star, very thin, being very rude about, like, the obesity problem in America was probably quite weird. But I think I loved the donut licking. I think it really enhanced my fave, not my problematic element of Ariana Grande. And now she's had a complete like transformation in the public eye, really, because of the concert where there was a terrorist attack in Manchester.
Yeah, her response to that and the concert that she put together and generally her attitude to it, I feel, has probably wiped out
You just can't bring up the donut licking now. After that,
no.
You'd look so petty, which is what we've just done, so we're really petty. But yeah, she did handle that stuff really well. I mean, obviously that's a situation that she's like in no way responsible for or involved with, so it's quite hard to like even judge her response to it, because why does she have to have a good response to it necessarily, because it's so such a terrible thing to happen. But she was great, and I loved that concert. I thought it was wicked, and she did do a really good job. So on the whole, we like Ariana Grande, problematically.
Yeah, we've just talked ourselves into her, basically,
yeah,
haven't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, do you want to pick one now?
Okay, I'm quite nervous.
Well, yeah, because that was meant to be the light relief one.
Yeah, that was the good one, so now everyone else is getting quite heavy, I think, from here on out. Oh, guess which one I picked. I obviously would pick this one. Johnny Depp.
Do you want to explain to the people?
Yeah, some people may already know about my lifelong relationship with Johnny Depp. I was... My name's Anna, and I am a former Johnny Depp stan. I hope you're all going to hold my hand through this journey. When I was a teenager, I loved all of his movies. I still have a real soft spot. Has anyone seen Benny and June? One person.
Yes. Congratulations.
It's like really... It's probably like mental health-wise quite problematic now, because it's about like... this girl who's got mental health problems falling in love with this like weird eccentric guy played by, who could it be but Johnny Depp, in a top hat and a waistcoat.
Yeah, he doesn't really take the hat off at any point, does he?
Well, he does, to throw it up in the air and catch it and do some tricks with it, but that's it. Yeah, and he's like a Buster Keaton kind of figure. Ooh. So I still like that movie, kind of, and some of his other movies, but obviously... The journey of being a Johnny Depp stan in your teens to now has been a tumultuous one. I met him a bunch of times, and irrelevant to the problematic conversation, but he was always super, super nice and very, very like charming and nice to this sort of 13-year-old crying, like giving him things like, I really love you. And him be like, okay, that's really nice, thank you. But I remember quite a few years ago, so before any of the stuff hit the papers about his private life, about... there was an article in the Hairpin that was just called like disappointments ranked, and number four was like Johnny Depp, and I felt it so hard at the time, because his brand did kind of dissolve into this very weird, very embarrassing thing quite like after like the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean movie or whatever, when he was just like doing these extremely like dialed up performances that was just so weird. And just generally seeming like I feel like that particular brand of masculinity just went out of fashion very quickly.
Yeah, the kind that wears waistcoats.
Yeah, it's just not great, is it? And then, obviously, he got divorced or broke up with his long-term partner, married Amber Heard, and then they had a very tumultuous relationship, and then it ended with lots of accusations, we should say, because we're being recorded, of domestic abuse. And it was all really horrible, really sad stuff. So Johnny Depp is a tricky one, because it's like, for me, this might be a problematic thing to say, if he had shown a lot of remorse and had maybe talked a bit about, I think lots of Johnny Depp fans know that he had very serious alcohol addiction problems and so on. If he'd shown a bit of, that's not an excuse for domestic abuse, obviously, but it's just context. If he'd shown a lot of remorse for that stuff and, like, you know, been honest about it, then maybe it would have been easier to kind of be like, this man has got serious problems and is in, you know, is looking for help for them. But that's not how it went down at all. So that was really, yeah, really quite bad. And now... Does one support Johnny Depp? Do you go to see Johnny Depp movies?
Well, this is the question, isn't it? And this is what we kind of have to ask ourselves with all of these people that we've picked out, but also just generally, if this happens to you with someone that you are a fan of, can you enjoy their subsequent work? Can you enjoy their work that happened before?
I feel like, with Johnny Depp, I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, please, I feel like I can enjoy his old stuff, because... I don't know, I feel like that's a different person that I'm looking at. And that's obviously what I would say as an old Johnny Depp fan. This one really hurt me, I think. But the newer stuff, that's where I have a conflict. Because Johnny Depp starring in the biggest Harry Potter franchise currently going. What if you love Harry Potter and you feel like Harry Potter like saved your life? Are you allowed to go and see a Harry Potter film? Obviously, yes, you can do what you want. But like, I don't know. How does it make you guys feel? I don't know. Like, It's a tricky one for me, the Johnny Depp one. Very tricky. So he'll just have to go in the pile of moral conflict. that most dramatic of piles. Should we pick another one?
Yeah, okay, I'll do it.
if anyone has thoughts on Johnny Depp, do chip in. Don't leave me floundering up here. Someone has a thought. Go on.
Oh, I think there's a mic coming over to you, actually. Hang on a sec. There you go.
Pressure's on. Please be good. I'm joking.
Not necessarily Johnny Depp, because I'm not really very invested in him. But I guess it's kind of easy. It's easier to say, like, Harry Potter film, he is one character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't feel like a work of Johnny Depp. It feels like he is in the film. Whereas I feel like with Woody Allen or something, he is the work. And then, or like a singer.
Guess what's written on this piece of paper?
You just picked one out of the bag?
It's Woody Allen.
I think the classic.
Yeah, kick us off with your thoughts on Woody Allen.
Oh, I don't know, just that he... I would say more just that, like, with a singer or with a director where the work is them, you think of Woody Allen films as being Woody Allen films, not, necessarily like a, you know...
He's not just one cog in the thing.
Yeah,
he's like
it is
the
him,
cog.
So I find it much easier to separate and say, I wouldn't go and watch a Woody Allen film now. Whereas, the Harry Potter film with Johnny Depp in it, it's like, you know...
That's a really interesting point, so the idea being that there's a difference. You can draw a line for an actor that you can't draw for an auteur, say.
Yeah, unless they're carrying a film, I'm going to make myself unpopular by saying I don't go and watch Harry Potter films or care about them at all, so I don't know how much he's carrying that film or how much it's you're going to go see it because of him, but are people going to see the Harry Potter film because of Johnny Depp? Probably not. They're going to go see it because they love Harry Potter. Because if you're going to support the film and therefore further his career, even if it was an actor... If you're like increasing their career and increasing their platform by going to see it, because like a Tom Cruise film, even if the director is big, it's still a Tom Cruise film because it's Tom Cruise. Mm. You know,
yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does, but it's sad because I think Johnny Depp's people and Johnny Depp. If the second Fantastic Beasts film does amazingly, they're still going to have an argument that points says like, look at this box office draw, Johnny Depp. Mm. Like
it's true, he would still get gigs off the back of it. He still benefits. But so don't go and watch Harry Potter, that's an easy choice for me, because I don't like it.
But I want to go. Yeah. I really want to go.
But this is sort of what we're getting at here, is that these, like Hermione Lee made you realise with Virginia Woolf, it's a choice only you can make.
I know.
And lines that you can only draw for yourself
based on... rules to follow. Give me some, please.
Yeah.
Should we do Woody Allen?
Shall we talk about Woody Allen in detail, since he is the one that I've... Thank you very much for your contribution.
Yes,
Lord.
Thank you. Please keep him coming.
Yes, Woody Allen.
So I feel like always perennially back in the news because he's so prolific and keeps making stuff. But for anyone who doesn't know, I'm sure everyone knows, Woody Allen was accused of abusing his 7-year-old adopted daughter, or his adopted daughter when she was 7, Dylan Farrow, and she wrote a prominent op-ed in the New York Times, I think, about 3 years ago, about that whole experience. Which is extremely powerful and extremely upsetting read. But he's always making new stuff, and he's obviously very celebrated and very popular as a director, so people do still watch a lot of his movies. I tweeted a little while ago, who hurt you the most by starring in a Woody Allen film? Many people said Emma Stone.
Interesting.
I feel particularly hurt by Steve Carell, because he seemed like a kind of like woke dad figure. But there's been a new one lately.
There's a new one. So the latest flare-up has come via Kate Winslet, who is in the next Woody Allen film. I don't know what it's called. And she was asked in an interview with the New York Times just recently, because I think she's worked with both Woody Allen and Roman Polanski, another major director who has a not dissimilar accusation hanging around him. She was asked, what do you think when you're considering taking a role with a director like that? And she said, of course one thinks about it, but then she went on to say, I didn't know Woody, and I don't know the family, and in the end I'm just an actor. They're the director.
It's the classic, like, no one really knows what goes on behind closed doors, which with something as serious as this does seem a bit of a cop-out, because
I think
there's a chance that was going on behind closed doors, that's so bad.
I think that's why those comments particularly really caused the whole thing to flare up all over again, actually, is because of their vagueness, really, right? Because I think whilst it would be very upsetting and disappointing if Kate Winslet were to say, yeah, I do think about it, but I don't think it matters, that would at least be a definite
she's
position that she's taken.
Yeah.
Or if she were to expound her theory of how you can completely separate the art and the artist and one does not have any relevance to the other. But that's not what she's doing, which makes you think that she does care and she does think about it and it does worry her. But she did it anyway because he's a prominent Hollywood director.
And she wants to be in the movie.
And she wants to be in the movie.
The other thing that this, the reason why Woody Allen's been back in the news lately, has anyone seen this Louis C.K. thing? The he's like making a film called I Love You Daddy. Yeah. And it's about like his character has a daughter who like runs off with a film director and she's underage. And the film director is very acclaimed and it's, I mean, I think he has even admitted, like, oh, yeah, this is about Woody Allen. And, yeah, oh, that makes me feel weird in my tummy. I don't like that at all. I Love You, Daddy. Very grim. And it's meant to be, like, morally ambiguous. And it just feels interesting to me, especially with the allegations around him as a figure as well as Woody Allen, that, like, I don't know, that men still get to be the people making the art about this stuff that's allowed to be morally ambiguous and so on. It's just all of it. I don't think that's a film I want to see. I don't think I Love You, Daddy is a film I want to see.
Yeah, but I think Woody Allen is such an interesting conversation to have with people in the pub, essentially, because there are people for whom his work is an integral part of their identity. You know, maybe they watched it growing up, they recognise themselves in one of his characters, in one of the characters that he, because he's so often in his own films, it's very, as you were saying, you really can't dissociate him
totally
from the film, because his physical image is the thing. And then you find, you grow up, you learn about these accusations. What does it say about you if you have to divest that from yourself? It's a really difficult thing to do. It can be a really upsetting thing to do. And is it even possible? Can you ever say, I will never watch another film of his ever again?
Totally.
Manhattan Now means nothing to me. Or do you acknowledge
the trickiness of it? The most interesting perspective that I ever heard on this was from a child abuse survivor. Who wrote an amazing piece for Rookie, and her name's Bethany Rose Lamont, and she writes about that experience of experiencing child abuse and using Woody Allen films specifically as her like place of refuge and her safe space. And she really like watched them on repeat. She wrote like cards to friends where she like wrote out dialogue by hand. It was like such a big part of her identity that she was a Woody Allen fan. And then she, obviously all of this stuff came out, you know, for the second or third time, and she had to really confront it. And she was just asking questions like, can I keep watching these movies? Like, is that okay? Will other survivors judge me? Will I get any enjoyment out of them seeing him and knowing that about him now? And there, obviously there were no right answers to it, but it's not as easy as being like, no one should be allowed to watch Woody Allen, because in that case you want to be like, yeah, like if they still give you something, that's amazing, you should still watch them. Like, kind of, it's almost like a weird fuck you to him that you're getting that out of them. But depressing. Dark.
Yeah, and I think
very problematic as it gets, really.
And the other reason why I think it is such an eternal topic for debate as well is because of his status as such an important Hollywood man, right? That people like Kate Winslet and other people in his industry find it really hard to forsake what you might get by working with him, but then also perhaps find it really hard to say, maybe I believe in these accusations, but maybe you are also a great director. Can I accept that those two things can be true at the same time?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to boll&branch.com today Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I don't know, man.
I don't know.
Shall I pick the last one from
the
bag?
Yeah, let's do it. I can't.
Who's it going to be? Is there even one in there? There is. Of course, it is T-Swizzle, Taylor Swift. I feel like next to Woody Allen, we've got to give her a much easier ride, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's not done anything super terrible, really. I feel like her problem is one of ignorance at best and kind of like, I don't know, like uncaringness at worst.
Yeah, or naive manipulation, perhaps.
Yeah. What are the accusations levelled against Taylor Swift? I feel like she's charged of white feminism, of silence on important matters, of playing a victim role, yeah, and of like hypocritical feminist branding. Those are the things that she's meant to have done. Right?
I feel like 2014-15, when there was, well, it still happens, but there was definitely a strong vogue in celebrity profiles to ask women if they were feminists, and
which I think is really unfair.
It's really unfair. But
really dumb.
If they said yes or if they said no, it would then
be the headline
and be a whole news story.
Yeah.
And Taylor Swift kind of she attracted attention by initially saying no and then later going, oh no, I didn't understand what that means and now I do, and look, I've done a music video with all my female friends in it which shows you that I am a feminist now.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of thing.
And then people were like, why are all your friends white? And she was like, she didn't say anything, I guess.
Or very wealthy pop stars, models.
It's a funny one, Taylor Swift, isn't it? Because I feel like she has just been like raked over in a way that almost the level of scrutiny on her is immense.
Mm.
And I sometimes think, you know, like all the lyrics that are considered to be like very anti like other women that she has. Pretty much every pop star has those, right? Like Katy Perry, no one ever gets annoyed with Katy Perry for all her like you PMS like a bitch or whatever, like those kinds of lines.
Yeah.
You change your mind like a girl changes clothes. Well, some of us girls have only got one outfit and we wear it every day. But like, yeah, I don't know. I do feel like it's kind of extra harsh on her. But then I also sometimes read quotes from her in interviews or like see a music video by her and I'm like, oh my God.
Well, there's also, if you happen to browse yourfaveisproblematic.tumblr.com, which is enjoyable, you can lose several hours to it. The Taylor Swift entry seems to blame her for the Madonna whore complex,
right,
in all of culture, which I'll be the first to admit there are some problematic things about Taylor Swift, but I don't think that's her fault. I don't think that started with her. And it has all these stills and stuff from her music videos where, say, like, in this part of the video, here she is wearing a white dress looking very pure. Look, she's wearing a red bikini, which denotes evilness.
Here she plays the brunette, a.k.a. a bitch.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like whilst, yep, she has used that imagery, she also didn't invent it.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can really crucify her for that.
We could talk about Taylor Swift forever. Does anyone have anything they want to say about burning points about Taylor Swift?
Or problematic faves,
yes.
At the back there.
Hello. It's not specifically about Taylor Swift. Sorry, it sounds a bit tinny. But more just to play devil's advocate.
Ooh.
Ooh.
You love to hear that in a Q&A, don't you?
So, obviously in law, if you do a crime, you do your time, and then your criminal record, depending on what it is, gets cleared. Do you think it's unfair for celebrities that it doesn't really tend to get cleared if they do something, not necessarily illegal, but something which we find morally uncomfortable?
So, like, if we take the example of Ariana and the donut, for instance.
Yeah.
You know,
hasn't she done her time?
She licked the donut. She was pilloried for several weeks on the internet. We should have all moved on, kind of thing. She took her punishment.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Or do you mean cases in which they've genuinely, like, been to court?
So that's the other thing. If they have committed a crime and been to jail, does that mean they can't be a celebrity ever again?
Well, they can just like go and work in Tesco, which is really what that means, right? When you have the right to like live your life again. It doesn't mean like you have the right to like be Chris Brown. Mm. It means you have the right to like I don't know, for people not to like follow you around in the street and like be really nasty to you. And presumably you could just like literally be like, okay, do you know what, I actually really wanted to work in a library all my life and I can do that now. I think the problem that people have is like, why are we still like giving them so much money and so much acclaim and so much I don't know, it's difficult because, you know, you want to believe in rehabilitation. There's no good society without rehabilitation, but
I think you also can't erase that something's happened. That's why criminal records are a thing, you know, this kind of it gets, things get noted
registered
and all that kind of thing. So you, I think it is possible if you judge that someone has, like Anna said, been sufficiently remorseful for what they did and genuinely seems to want to learn from it, then by all means they continue your career, you continue to enjoy their output if you want to, but you don't have to forget that it ever happened. You don't have to pretend that nothing's changed.
Forgive, don't forget.
Yeah, exactly.
Words,
yeah,
like.
Yeah. Put yourself in a, give yourself the moral judgment position, and
totally.
And hand down your sentence.
Does anyone have any more suggestions of problematic faves that they want to talk about? Yes, with the lovely blonde curls.
Shush. Okay.
Gotta have the mic.
This was one that upset me recently because I'm a huge Buffy fan. I don't know if you heard about Joss Whedon's everything with his wife, writing that open letter about how he'd been really unfaithful all these years, and not only that, kind of used her as a prop, in her words.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of bolster his, you know, this thing of a male feminist who's creating these wonderful feminist female characters, like in Doll's House. Although I guess you can argue that maybe they were also problematic in some ways, but I don't know. Again, it's one of those things where you kind of like, do you divorce him from his work? That, you know, I loved Buffy and I think it's great to have female role models, kick-ass heroines and everything. So am I still allowed to enjoy Buffy?
I think most people would like say yes, right? But I'll hand over to Caroline because she's the real Buffy fan here.
Yeah, well, if you heard last week's episode, Anna caused great controversy by saying that Buffy was fine.
I haven't seen much Buffy is the problem. It's not that I have seen all of Buffy and concluded, it's just that I haven't really seen much Buffy.
Well, I watched it all as a teenager and, like you, loved it very much. And I do find it very disappointing to learn these things about its creator. But I think kind of what we're driving at with all this chat about problematic faces is that they're decisions that only you can make. You sort of have to put yourself in the position of weighing up, how much does the thing mean to you? How bad was what happened? Does it, given that the show is completely in the past, there's no new episodes happening, how closely do you align it? I come down on the side of you take what you take from it, whilst not denying what happened. You can still continue to, you know, if you found a great role model in it, even though it was created by a man who turned out to be quite shitty, that's still great that you found a role model.
I think loads of people with Buffy seem to come down, like, we wanted, in a bit we're going to talk a little bit more about, like, now you've got a problematic fave, what do you do with it? But I think with something like that, it's definitely a case of, like, the thing being better than the person.
Mm.
Like, things can really definitely, like, become more transcendent than the person that made them. And, you know, Buffy was a big show, loads of people working on it. It was a really amazing thing that happened at an amazing time, and that's special and magical, and it doesn't all have to be because of Joss Whedon, necessarily. And even if it is, who cares? Like, he's just some guy who had a good thought one time, and it became great.
Well. There's another hand up, I think, somewhere behind you, or did I imagine that? Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry, wow, that's really loud. It's actually quite similar to yours. It's with H.P. Lovecraft, the fantasy writer. And I love his work, I love everything about it. I love how amazing... He's a really good writer. But he does a lot of racist allegations in his short stories. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, yeah, he was a man of his time, you know, which I think is completely silly, really. So, and I saw, and he was definitely not he was just like straight racist, and it's really shocking in his short stories.
Yeah.
But like, he's everywhere. When you like horror and thriller or fantasy, you can't really not read what he's doing. So with like such an iconic figure, like, can you ever like try not to think about it or try to think, you know, like, I mean, they're still all the time at the back of your mind, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's hard. That's a real hard one. Definitely what the, like, the Tennyson Gladstone thing. So the thing that Tennyson apparently kept saying at this dinner party was actually N-words are tigers over and over again, which is obviously like a pretty, like, even, you know, making allowances for the time and whatever, that's a... Yeah. It's a pretty shocking thing to say. And the thing that made me think, well, it is a really bad thing to say because it's like, here's this politician being like, whoa, you can't say this. Like, also,
well, that's the thing. The context shows you that it wasn't okay at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
People, I think especially with like older stuff, people are really keen to be like, oh no, everyone thought that way. Mm. And sometimes you have to do a little bit of research to be like, did everyone think this way, or did like a certain like section of like white upper class society think this way, and is that basically what we're saying here? But you know, I don't know, if you want to read H.P. Lovecraft, then like do it and think about it. And if it's because you like sci-fi and you think that everyone's always saying you have to read him, then build your own canon. Ignore them. You don't have to.
I also think it's perfectly possible to accept that bad things can be influential just as good things can be, and that just because someone's, you know, like, I really like the podcast Welcome to Night Vale, for instance, which has strong Lovecraftian overtones, right? I think they've made something really brilliant and progressive from that. So I think it's perfectly possible to enjoy the influence without unequivocally loving the originator of the trope. So
totally. Thank you. Any more faves, problematic ones? Yes.
I was just with the Oscars, with Casey Affleck in the Oscars and his controversial.
So I
wasn't sure if I was totally alone. It was all news to me, the kind of allegations and Brie Larson's face when she had to hand him the award. And there was a lot of interesting commentary on that. And I kind of think that was quite an interesting one because the film I thought was wonderful, really moving. And it was the celebration of him winning the award as an actor and kind of taking him out of the project and looking at him as the individual that made it feel much more problematic. And there was a lot of pieces saying the art is way bigger than the artist. And if you think of the film and celebrate the film, if it had won Best Picture, that would have been very different from him winning Best Actor. And I thought that was kind of, with the Johnny Depp thing and Harry Potter, if you merge them into these big movies, it changes the narrative slightly.
And maybe there is a case, like a friend at the back was saying earlier, that there's if say we do, I actually didn't see that film, big lapse on my part, but if we do just completely write off that film because of him, we're kind of diminishing the work that all the other hundreds of people who worked on the film put into it, and as you say, made it a really great thing.
Yeah, I guess there's an argument that that makes, if that happens, then those casting decisions maybe don't get made in the first place. But yeah, I agree with you. There's something specifically weird about that one. And I didn't see Manchester by the Sea, but I saw A Ghost Story, which he plays the ghost under the sheet. And so A Ghost Story is a movie about a ghost in a sort of Halloween-like sheet, and he plays the ghost in that. And I went to a press screening, and I got the big press pack full of like all the info that you normally get, and it was very much like, Academy Award winner Casey Affleck, amazing feat of acting under a sheet. Like, no. It was all, I mean, it was kind of ridiculous, but it was very, very, yeah, celebrating him, all his achievements, and he'd worked with the director before in this very raw movie and blah, blah, blah. He specifically seems to get cast in a certain role that's kind of like protective male who also has great guilt about the way he treats women, and doesn't that make him complex? He goes in the bad pile, definitely. Any more, or shall we... Yeah, one more? Thank you.
I think there's a big kind of engine of being problematic in Hollywood, which is Scientology. And how do you feel when you find out one of your favourite stars is a Scientologist?
That's a great question.
This is very real to me. This happened quite recently with Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure many people, you know, I love the work of Elizabeth Moss, loved her in The West Wing, then in Mad Men, in The Handmaid's Tale, in Top of the Lake, everything. She's a queen of TV, she's fantastic. And then just recently, I think she was asked about it in an interview, wasn't she? And she kind of shut down the question, saying like, it's not relevant, it's, you know, it's not...
Classic Scientologist move.
And it does make me feel differently about her, because it's an order of thought that I have no time for. I think it's I have to diminish my respect for anyone who wants to own that and be part of that. It comes back to that idea of remorse, doesn't it? That if someone's still openly saying, yeah, I'm part of this and I'm fine with that.
I think, again, it's one of those things that came up with the Elizabeth Moss one because it started to bleed into her brand a little bit, because her brand was like actress who plays person in like patriarchal, weird microcosmic society. And then like they were like, isn't it weird that this leading actress in the like dystopian cult TV series is like also in a weird cult? And then people were like, oh yeah, this is weird, we should ask her about it, how she feels about it. And then she like didn't want to talk about it.
There was a similar and but smaller fury a couple of years ago when Orange is the New Black first got a lot of critical attention. I don't know her name, but the actor who plays Alex Voss in that is also a practicing Scientologist, and that caused a lot of conflicts for interviewers and stuff, because you know she's a really kind of badass feminist character in many ways, and yeah, to have her kind of say, yeah, I don't see how that conflicts at all with being a Scientologist, you sort of have to say, well I disagree, I have to say I disagree.
Interesting.
Great question, thank you.
Shall we move on, or does anyone have a burning final problematic fave? We'll move on. Okay, Caroline, you've got a problematic fave. What do you do with your problematic fave? How do you treat them? How do you change your relationship with them?
I wrote down a few things in response to this. And the first one I wrote down was be informed. I know that sounds dumb, but I think there is sometimes a tendency when you maybe out the corner of your eye glimpse something you don't quite like about someone that you're a big fan of and you go, nope, can't see it. Not involved.
Me through all my teens.
Yeah, exactly. I think you can't latch onto a tiny piece of information and allow it to poison your whole interest in someone, but at the same time you can't pretend it's not there. So the best thing you can do is be completely informed about it, read widely about the context, as far as possible, you know, read...
As long as it's not upsetting.
Yeah, as long as it's not upsetting.
Particularly upsetting for you.
But if you can, you know, read Dylan Farrow's own account of what happened to her. Don't read secondhand reports of it or just listen to...
We were talking about that earlier, weren't we? Because and it's terrible to say that someone's powerful writing would make you believe them more in this kind of case, and that's not what we're trying to say. But if you've read that article, it is really impossible to get back on board with Woody Allen, I think, because the way she's written it with that kind of like, what's your favourite Woody Allen movie, is how she opens it, and then she asks you it again at the end, and you're like... None of them. Oh my god, this is awful. You know, yeah, I completely agree. Sometimes you will read something that changes your mind, and even if it was really unpleasant to read, you think, I'm glad that I read that. I'm really glad that I read it. I agree. Be informed.
Be informed, but also that works both ways, because you can sometimes have... And this feeds into a discussion we had on a previous episode of the podcast about your favourite problematic culture, which is a slightly different sort of subset of more internet memeology, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where people will enter and try and shut down a discussion of a particular person by saying, yeah, but your favourite's problematic, so no further discussion of them or their work. That if someone tries to do that to you with an inaccurate or ill-informed reading of something that's happened, you want to be able to say, but hang on, no, that isn't exactly how it happened, therefore I feel justified in my continuing interest in this person's work.
Totally.
So yeah, be informed.
That's a good one. I've also written some notes on my notes. I've put, decide for yourself how much this affects your relationship with their work. This is again more of that art from artist stuff, like is it like a Woody Allen movie where you feel like, ooh, gross, this really changes the power dynamics at play in this work, or just reveals to me the existing gross ones in like more starkly. You know, if it's possible to, like you say, maybe with Fantastic Beasts, the franchise, not have those kind of connotations, maybe it's fine to carry on watching it, and maybe it's fine to carry on supporting that franchise. I also have a quote here from Tarvi Gevinson, one of my favourite people, from Twitter, and it says, "Jerks can make transcendent art. I take comfort in accounting for factors like the mystery of the creative process, taking away credit, lol." Which is, I think, what we were talking about with Joss Whedon and people like that. When sometimes you watch something or read something, or you know, you go to the theatre or whatever, and you have such a crazy, like, life-changing experience that it actually can't be thanks to one person. I remember, this is really random, but I went to I went to this weird socialist commune in France. It's like not still going, but like it was from the 1800s, and it's like
it was that beautiful theatre.
Yeah, exactly. There's like they have instead of a church in this society, they had a theatre, and that was like the centre of the town where they all lived, and it was like the centre of life, and it was like literally their religion and their church was this theatre where they would like put on little plays for the harvest and whatever. And I like went into it and was like, I have never felt so understood. The theatre is the church. That's how it works for me in my life, which sounds like glib and pretentious and whatever, but I think for a lot of people that kind of is the case. Like if they're going through a really like traumatic time in their life, they might not be religious, but they might listen to their favourite band like 60 million times and cry and then feel something. So if that's you and Buffy is that for you, that's cool, that's fine. Like Joss Whedon cannot, like, just like the Pope cannot take credit for everyone's like great transformative Catholic, I don't know, epiphanies, Joss Whedon can't take credit for that. You can believe in the weird forces without believing in the patriarchal structures
behind
them.
And you can take that a bit further as well, and not to get all into like critical theory or whatever, but you can say that I helped create that, you know, my response.
That's what David Bowie would say.
Yeah,
David Bowie was all about that, wasn't he? He was just like, well, art doesn't exist without two people, the person who's doing it and the person who's watching it.
Yeah, so I think you can say, I had, in watching this thing and feeling like I did, I contributed something. It's not all about them.
Totally. Yeah. And that's fandom. Yes. Yeah. So also one question I had was, what if the thing or the fandom is so tied up with that person's identity? So I feel like taking an unproblematic faith as our starting point, Rihanna, if Rihanna, God forbid, ever did anything really terrible, which she wouldn't because she's Rihanna, you would not, like, the part of loving Rihanna is loving Rihanna as a person. Like, everyone loves Rihanna's music, sure, but, like, it's also about her attitude and her being and her fashion and everything to do with her. Same with Beyonce, like a lot of these figures. I've always been a big Kanye West fan. Kanye West has done so many problematic things. He's like misogynist, anti-black women, homophobic. Like, so can I still like Kanye West? Because regardless of like listening to his music, I remember reading a great Heather Havrilesky, I'm sure some people here read Heather Havrilesky or Ask Polly at The Cut and The All. I wrote a great column about like, if you're feeling, I think the word was tepid, if you're like keep making tepid choices and seeking tepid men in your life, is there anything worse? Then you should think, what would Kanye do? Which I guess is a phrase that originally comes from, what would Jesus do, right? Yeah. And as much as Kanye would like to be Jesus, he's not, like, you can't love all his life choices. So is it okay to still think, what would Kanye do? And I think, yeah, if there's something about that person that speaks to you when you're feeling, sorry, my mic, when you're feeling tepid or like when you're feeling like unable to be bold and make bold choices, it's still kind of fine to be like, well, what would Kanye do that doesn't involve tweeting something homophobic? Like,
you know, there's levels. You're allowed to cherry pick. You're a human who can make choices.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Basically.
Which feeds into something else that I put down that you can, a strategy you can deploy for this is, remember that you get to decide for yourself. It can, especially if the internet suddenly burst into flames over one particular incident. I was telling you about, I've been listening to this podcast recently called Dissect, which in its second season is focusing exclusively on one Kanye West album and looking at him and his life and his work and stuff. And it starts with the 2009 VMAs incident. Kanye interrupting Taylor Swift.
So much has changed since then.
I know, it feels like ancient history. I actually went and watched the clip and I was like, wow, this is a million years ago. But the point that the podcaster was making was that at the time, so much has happened since then that we feel kind of slightly differently about that event. Mm. But at the time, he was universally pilloried for it.
Yeah, the president said he was a jackass.
Yeah, like the nation and the world united to say, you did a bad thing.
Yeah.
And that... So if you get, you know, if you are a Kanye West fan in that situation, you get caught up in this massive backlash against, it can be easy to forget that you do still have a choice, that you do still have your own critical faculties, that you can still analyse for yourself, and that you don't have to...
You can go against the prevailing voice on Twitter.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so, so important. I think something, this is something we touched on in the Your Favours problematic segment of our podcast, but killing your idols... is so important, right? And I'm someone who has a very obsessive personality, and I've been obsessed with so many celebrities, and I'm really grateful for those experiences of being obsessed with celebrities. But I think there's a way that you can like kill your idols and literally dissect them like a frog and think, like, what are the parts of this person that I like and value, and what do they say about either the person I am or the person I want to be or the things in life that I value? Is it Kanye's, like, boldness? Is that the bit of the frog that I like? Like, and like have a look at it, and then like put those gross froggy bits in your pockets.
This is a great metaphor. I'm really enjoying it.
And then just like take it with you on the journey of life, and like have learned something about yourself via these people, because that's essentially what they are, right? Celebrities are just like a little doll's house for us to be like, well, I think Taylor Swift's the goodie here, and for people to be like, no, she's the baddie, and then you have to be like, oh, okay, well, maybe actually I'm like really protective and like defensive about things to do with white feminism because I'm white, and then you learn something about yourself. And yeah, so I think that's fine. We're all just using these people as toys, so yeah, you're allowed to dissect the frog and take bits of the frog with you and leave the rest of the frog on the street to die. That's fine.
I hope the frog was already dead before you started cutting it out. That's a very different metaphor.
Yeah. And the other question I have, which hopefully people will be able to help me with, is unproblematic fave even a thing?
Yeah, is there such thing as the unproblematic fave?
Or is that just like the whirring of the PR machine that you're seeing, and does it actually mean that this person's never been vulnerable or open with their audience in their life? Mm. Who knows?
Or are all faves just waiting to become problematic?
Yeah. Is a problematic fave just a fave? Is that what this is?
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, it's time for some more questions, comments. That was kind of rambling, agony aunt, very strange section called Your Fave Was Problematic, Now What? So yeah, if anyone has any questions or comments or suggestions of faves that are truly unproblematic, please bring them to the table. Laura, who inspired this entire thing. Thank you, Laura.
I have a suggestion for how you deal with problematic faves, and it's adjust expectations. I think with people like Johnny Depp and Casey Affleck, obviously those allegations are disgusting, and I personally wouldn't want to engage with their work afterwards, though it's a personal choice. But with people like Taylor Swift and Ariana Grande and maybe even Lena Dunham, they have not committed any major infractions. They have committed the infraction of dislikability as women, and yeah. I think when you're faced with a figure like that, it's important to look at yourself and think, why do we expect women, especially, because I feel like somebody like Lena Dunham gets in the neck more than Johnny Depp, and she, to my knowledge, hasn't beaten up an ex-partner allegedly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, why do we expect those things from people? It's like with the new Taylor Swift single, everybody's nobody really likes it because everyone's saying, like, oh, it's so bitchy, she's just airing all these beefs and stuff. But personally, as a sometimes vindictive also 28-year-old woman, I'm like, I'm grateful for you, like, airing that nasty part of my personality that I'm meant to keep hidden.
Totally. But,
yeah. I think, yeah, the Lena Dunham point is such a good one as well, that when you stop and think, what has Lena Dunham ever done to hurt you? Why?
She can be a bit obnoxious, yeah. And I agree. But it's not really hurting anyone, is it, being obnoxious? And I do think some of the allegations about Lena Dunham are so upsetting and mean.
Yeah. And it is possible to be justly critical of her work and the choices that she makes about it without it being all about her and her personality, and her personality then being unacceptable henceforth.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And with anything in life, don't we expect more from women, young women? And I think it feeds into a larger question of, why do we want our celebrities to be like political spokespeople? That's kind of weird in the first place. Like, I guess someone like Lena Dunham is a particular figure because she made this art that everyone was like, everyone put so much onto it of it being like, this is the new aware voice of the generation. This is what young women are like in their early 20s and that was really more the media around the show than Lena Dunham
herself.
Well,
she satirised it, didn't she, in the first episode, so famously. Hannah Horfer
says,
I'm the voice of the generation. I'm the voice of a generation.
Yeah.
Like, she put that in there for a reason.
And I think, actually, Lena Dunham tackled the topic of problematic faves very well in the last season of Girls. If you've seen the episode where she, like, goes to a writer's house and she's written, like, a blog about him, about all these, like, allegations about him taking advantage of young fans. And then she goes to his house and he tries to, like, make her see his perspective a bit. And there's a bit in the episode where you're like, ooh, where's this going? Is this going to be, like, a defence of, like, men who've had these allegations thrown against them? And then it kind of switches gears again. It's a really good episode of TV about that kind of thing. But, yeah, I definitely agree. I do think we expect more of women. And I think it would be, again, it's like killing your idols, isn't it? We need to free ourselves of these ideas that they have to hold up, like, these people aren't experts in, like, I don't know, feminism or in politics or in like what society needs to function properly. So why do people go into these things and ask them questions like, you do get the sense that there's a lot of like, so really enjoyed your turn in Cinderella 2. What do you think the solution is to systemic racism? They're like, what? I don't know. Definitely. Yeah. Lower our bars.
Another question.
I agree we should lower our bars, and I agree that people like Lena Dunham do probably, or I'm not sure about Lena Dunham, but like I do wonder whether someone like Lena Dunham or Taylor Swift, who do present themselves as having an opinion, like Lena Dunham is not someone who shies away from political topics. She writes essays about them. She puts it into her work. Whereas Ariana Grande has never pretended to be a feminist or
a donut buyer.
A donut. She has never spoken about her political issues about donuts. So why are we?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that there should be a separation between people who talk on these topics and should have debate. Like, they should be debated with because they are presenting an opinion. Lena Dunham like presents herself as a feminist, and not everyone should be asked and demanded of to be woke and to be a feminist. But Taylor Swift also, I think, you know, uses feminism and uses certain kind of things and tries to kind of be a figure, so maybe she should have.
So for you it's when there's hypocrisy, there's some
it's
sort
not
of
necessarily like hypocrisy. I don't think it's about being hypocritical. I think it's just that if I just think not everyone should have to be a political figure, but if you're going to talk about political and societal issues, then it should be allowed to kind of question them, not necessarily in such a like piling on way, and not necessarily in a like, well, you're not allowed to speak about it because you were hypocritical that one time. Like, everyone can make mistakes and everyone can be vulnerable and everyone can learn and say the wrong thing sometimes, but it's just more that I think that Ariana Grande shouldn't be expected to be, you know, the same, shouldn't be expected to have the same level of like engagement in these topics as someone who has. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
It does make sense. I think sort of what you're saying is you've got to play the person on the field that they actually play on, if you know what I mean. So Lena Dunham writes about feminism. It's fair to, you know, I don't want to say politely, but you know what I mean, in a civil fashion, engage with her on that topic. But if, yeah.
Maybe there's a point where you're such a fave that you're no longer problematic. You're just a fave, even if you've done problematic things. Okay, is that everyone then? Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for listening to us.
Seem to all already listen, so thank you. Rather than please, at the end of our quizzes, I'm always like, everyone's had like 4 pints, and I'm like, also listen to Seriously, and like nobody cares. Got to learn to do that at the beginning. But thank you so much for listening and coming, and enjoy the pod festival. Loads of cool people here. Have a great time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.